This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisin, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 98 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I apologize for not having a show earlier in the week. I was out in Los Angeles for the FSTA conference, hanging out with a bunch of people in the fantasy sports industry. It was a great, nerdy time, but I'm back home now, and I'm ready to answer some mailbag questions. As always, if you have questions, don't forget that you can email them to me at jj@numberfire.com or hit me up on Twitter with a question at @LateRoundQB. And since the fantasy football offseason is here, if you have any topics that you'd like for me to cover over the next few months, feel free to email me. I've got lots that I want to talk about during the non-mailbag shows, but I want to analyze topics that you guys care about. So I'd love to hear that feedback. All right, let's dig into this week's mailbag questions. This first one is from @IsaidI'mBusy. Apparently not busy enough to send me a mailbag question. Do you ever look at win rates in redraft? What are the lessons that you try to learn from them? So I asked what was exactly meant by win rates, and what I said I'm busy is talking about here is player win rates. As in, Jared Goff was on 5% of winning teams on, say, ESPN this year, while Devontae Freeman was on 3% of them. We're not referring to my, JJ's, win rates. To answer the question, though, I think that you can certainly look at them, and they're useful in certain formats like best ball leagues. Because in best ball leagues, every week is the same and there's no team management. So results not only aren't skewed by players who just did well in the fantasy football playoffs because there aren't any in a best ball league, but results also aren't skewed by poor team management, which is what you'll run into in casual leagues. And let's be honest, guys, the majority of fantasy football leagues are casual. But I just mentioned it, the biggest issue with looking at win rates in regular redraft leagues is that it's going to not only skew towards players who were drafted late and simply hit, like Alvin Kamara, but they're going to skew towards players who did well in an arbitrary 2-week or 3-week period during the regular season. That's the fantasy football playoffs. But it's completely arbitrary. And I think we generally know which players were good and which ones weren't in fantasy football this year. So from strictly a redraft perspective, I'm not that into looking at win rates. Best ball is another story though, because you're trying to look at things that you're not necessarily analyzing in redraft, like best team composition. This next one's an email. It says, "Hello, sir. I am very interested in your thoughts about the Green Bay backfield. It seems like people have an emotional attachment to either Ty Montgomery, Jamal Williams, or Aaron Jones. Is there anything statistical that can point to either who is most likely to be the lead running back in 2018, or is there any evidence that Green Bay could become more of a running back by committee? Thanks for taking time to answer people's questions. Wiley from London, Ontario, Canada." As I talked about a lot before on the show, I'm very much an Aaron Jones guy. I just think he's good at the game. He had a crazy good production profile coming out of school, and he was elite efficiency-wise this year. According to NumberFire's rushing net expected points metric, Jones added 0.17 points per rush this year, while Jamal Williams' rate was 0.01 and Ty Mott's was 0.02. And then Jones had a 50% success rate, which is way, way, way above average. Aaron Jones was a unicorn on a football field this year. But how I view that backfield right now in January 2018... I think you're probably looking at some sort of running back by committee during the 2018 season where one of those backs will naturally have a chance to have a larger role. I think Jones has the best odds of doing that, but with running backs, volume comes down to a coach's decision. Even if one running back is clearly better than the other, it doesn't always matter for fantasy purposes. We saw that this past year with Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray. So I like Jones, but the running back position is about opportunity, so we'll need to see what beat writers and coaches say and do throughout this offseason to get a clearer picture. This next one says, "Hey JJ, as you know, it's that time of year when new coaches and offensive coordinators add and subtract from teams. Do you take their coaching style into effect when you evaluate a player? For instance, a running back who was in a run-heavy offense last year is now in a more pass-first, run-second style of offense this year. Would this matter, or does your evaluation of a player solely rest on their NEP formula? Thanks again, Miles." All right, there's actually a lot to unpack here. To be clear to everyone, my evaluations of players isn't at all based solely on NumberFire's net expected points formula. That's a metric that was developed by our chief analyst, Keith Goldner, and I use the metric when trying to get a better understanding of a player's performance. And our projections at NumberFire are based on similarity scores, which use net expected points, but it's far bigger than simply looking at net expected points and saying this guy is good or this guy is bad. I'm not saying that you're assuming this, Miles, but I wanted to get that out of the way. I do my own projections. This isn't to say that Number Fire's projections are bad. They're not bad at all. They're great. But I've said this before, and actually there's a great podcast that I did with Mike Clay of ESPN.com from last season that goes through a lot of this. But I do projections not because I need to be incredibly accurate, but I do them to go through the process of doing them. When you look at teams and their depth charts and dig into the roles of each player via a projection model of some sort, you're able to spot where inefficiencies may lie versus average draft position. Of course I want my projection to be right, but I'm never going to be 100% correct with projections. Going through the process of building them is far more valuable than simply having the right end numbers, because the right results are never going to be fully accurate. That's the nature of forecasting. So to your question about offensive coordinators and switching teams, this is all factored into how I produce projections because I start at the team level. At the team level, you're looking at tendencies of what coaches want to do. If I know that a Chip Kelly offense is going to run at a fast pace, that'll be reflected in projected plays run. And that all has a domino effect. Once you're able to project how teams perform, you can fit player projections underneath that and begin splitting up market share numbers. So essentially, I'm looking at how coordinators have performed in their tendencies, baking that into team-level projections, and then that has a net effect on the entire team. But like I said on one of the more recent mailbag episodes, I don't let coordinators overshadow common sense when it comes to projections. Personnel changes from team to team, obviously, and so if a coordinator once fed his ex-receiver in a past job, that doesn't automatically mean that'll happen with this one. And game script matters as well, so if the defense of that offensive coordinator sucks, then the coordinator may not be able to be as run-heavy as he'd like. That all matters. You've got to think about game script and personnel and not just, this guy's offense features running backs who catch passes. This next question says, hey JJ, a question from the January 19th episode hit home for me. 2 years ago, I started a family league with my wife and a bunch of her family and cousins. What started out as a 14-team league went to 12 this year, and again, we had a few teams who really had a hard time staying engaged. And I fear I will have to drop the league to 10 teams next year. What I want to know are some ideas for keeping teams engaged on a weekly basis who are not yet as enthusiastic about fantasy football as I am. Thanks for all your work, Brad. This is a really common problem, and I've even run into it at times with my home league that I've commissioned for a long time. It's really hard when you've got a group of hardcore types versus some who check their teams only once or twice per week. There are routes that you can go down. Some are tougher than others, though. One thing you can do is obviously just keep things the same and realize that that specific league is just that way. But if you want it to be more competitive, you can either raise the entry fee and put more money on the line, or maybe have some sort of fun punishment for last place. No one wants to eat a bowl of mayonnaise if they get last. That'll light a fire under them to fix their team each week. That's really all it comes down to, though, incentivizing people. Maybe doing something for the weekly top scorer. But the thing that you have to remember is that you can't simply make these people bigger fantasy and football fans. You have to make the league more enjoyable, and hopefully that ends up being the result. This next one says, hi JJ, love your articles and podcasts. I'd like to ask a follow-up question to something that you answered on the most recent mailbag. You advise the person to cut loose Aaron Rodgers and keep four other players. We do this because we live the stream and quarterbacks don't really matter in fantasy football. Now, what if you know most of your league keeps a quarterback in this situation for whatever reason? I'm in a semi-dynasty keeper league and every team keeps 12 players. Do I keep Garoppolo and or Breeze, knowing that every other team will keep at least one quarterback? Streaming every week is more difficult in this league due to the expanded rosters. We start only one quarterback and each team is capped at owning three quarterbacks at a time. Thanks for your help, Paul. The late round quarterback notion and the devaluing of quarterbacks is geared towards regular redraft leagues, but you could say it's for redraft leagues and the majority of keeper leagues as well. Dynasty, though, is a completely different beast. I certainly still devalue the position in Dynasty, but when you're keeping 12 players, you're looking at a different type of opportunity cost. For instance, if you're keeping just one player year over year, then that means that you're foregoing the opportunity of keeping a decent number of good players when you decide that keeper. Like maybe you've got Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt, but you can only keep one of them for next season. That makes for a hard choice, and the opportunity cost in going one way is high because you're foregoing the chance to keep a superstar. This is a huge reason why keeping quarterbacks in most keeper formats is dumb. Because not only can you get them late and they're replaceable in most leagues, but when you keep that player, you're foregoing the chance to keep a player who may be better at a more important position. So Paul, in your case, you're keeping 12 dudes. That's a lot of keepers compared to a typical keeper league. So when you get to your 12th keeper, your opportunity cost is pretty low. you're looking at Drew Brees or Jimmy Garoppolo versus someone like, I don't know, Mike Wallace or Danny Amendola or something. So sure, in your case, you can keep a quarterback. That's going to be it for today's show. Thank you all for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, please do so by going to Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And also, if you're on iTunes, please do me a favor and leave a rating and review. It's a great way to give back to this podcast. And again, if you have mailbag questions for a future episode, hit me up on Twitter at LateRoundQB or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend, and I'll be back in your ears early next week.